So we'll present the results of the first quarter. They will be presented by Mr. Wemmer, and then we'll come to the question and answer session, and I hand over to Mr. Wemmer now. Thank you very much, Mr. Groß. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to report to you on the figures of the first quarter. Before I get into the figures, I would like to start with the business and customer aspects from the first quarter. I hope that you all have the presentation available on screen or in a printed version in front of you. And I'll mention the figures of the slide so that you know where I currently am in my presentation. So for some time, we've reported on our new products as well. In property and casualty, for example, we have two product innovations, one in Italy, which is called Allianz One, a modular product around family and home that covers all aspects of daily life, and it also includes cars, and we're selling this Allianz One product in Italy in a digital agency. That is to say, we've combined our process and digitalized it there, and if you have the opportunity to get to Milan, I'll be more than willing to organize a visit for you, because this is really an exciting experience that creates a lot of transparency in the sales process between insurance agent and customer. Privatschutz in Germany is another insurance, a modular cover in Germany that replaces some of our traditional products, and there's high demand for that. For the first time at the end of the last year, we again had increasing customer numbers in PNC, in our PNC business. In life health, you will see that the sales volumes have developed very well, and we have two examples on the product side driving that. So we have a new fixed index annuity product in the United States, which gives the customers the opportunity to profit in the current environment that is still difficult. So it offers them a lot of upside and covers them from any downside trends. Then we have Allianz Global Benefits, a product we've launched providing multinational companies with employee benefit solutions from one company globally. And we have our product Perspektive, which we've discussed before in Germany. We still have high demand for that, and within the company, it still holds the record for the best new product introduction in Germany in decades. Now, when it comes to asset management, that certainly is an area that you will be interested in. I'm sure about that. PIMCO has launched its largest private fund ever, a very successful launch with $5.5 billion in committed capital. The money will then be collected once the investments take place. That's a fund specializing in difficult assets in banking, on banking balance sheets. And it will replace the funds that ended last year and will hopefully lead to high one-off performance fees in several years. Those $5.5 billion are not included in the net inflows because the money hasn't been transferred physically so far. And also Allianz Global Investors improved its income and growth fund, and here we meet very high customer demand with net inflows of 2.3 billion euros in the first quarter, so a very strong result here. Now, when it comes to investments, we stick to our statements that we've published over the last 2 years. We focus on larger investments in real estate. So we acquired two shopping centers in the first quarter, and we also invest in infrastructure. We were able to take part in the funding of a motorway in Belgium, for example, and we would really be in favor of quicker and stronger government investments in infrastructure in Europe. Acquisition, that's part of the Unipol business in Italy, and there have been a lot of reports about that, so I don't need to get into any details at this point. And in the first quarter, we signed the UN Principles for Sustainable Insurance, and then we also acquired a stake in the footballer soccer club FC Bayern Munich. You're probably familiar with that. So let me now come to the figures. The first quarter was a strong quarter because compared to the outlook for the year of 10 billion, so on average 2.5 billion per quarter, if you calculate this, we're clearly above this average value, and the analysts also expected only a result of a little above 2.5 billion, and the clear outperformance compared to the analyst estimates to start with something like that is always positive. If you see something like this, then the quarter is always positive for the CFO of a company. 2.7 billion, that's 2.6% less than last year, driven above all by the reduction in asset management, but those at the time were one-off performance fees that we had to we paid back at the beginning of 2013. And when we come to the asset management, I'll explain this in more detail. What was positive in the first quarter was that PNC clearly improved its result, and we also saw an improvement in life health compared to the previous year. The result was also burdened by the strong euro and continues to be burdened by that. The currency of Europe that was said to be terminally ill 2 years ago is getting stronger and stronger, and this is getting difficult for our expert industry. It's not an operating issue, but it also reduces our figures in a way. The currency effect was around 40 million, so overall a very strong result, driven also by a clearly improved revenue. 34 billion euros is the highest single revenue in a quarter throughout the history of the group. And the net income of 1.6 billion euros is the consequence of the operating result with an unchanged tax rate. Let's now look at our capital position. No surprise, the capital position is very healthy. We have a double A rating, and we can only confirm this. Our shareholders' equity arose. The conglomerate solvency increased, or the economic solvency increased slightly here. The strong increase in life and our increasing the increasing shareholders' equity were balanced, and conglomerate solvency, or the economic solvency, above 200%. We're moving towards the final regulations of Solvency II, and above 200%, we're slightly higher with this than I had published on the annual press conference. So a very strong capital position that can only be underlined once more. Now let's look into the segments. Property casualty. Our growth was eaten up by foreign exchange rate changes. So if we take out consolidation we only have a total growth of 0.1%, so hardly any growth, because the growth of 0.14% of the volume was really absorbed by the currency effects, the US dollar, Brazil, Turkey, and also Russia. There were severe distortions in the exchange rates towards or to the the euro, and as we're committed to all these markets and present in all these markets, that has really absorbed some of our growth. If we take a look at the development in the different countries, good development in Germany, then also in HECS, positive in the global lines, credit insurance is developing positively, and Allianz Worldwide Partners. We talked about this line before, 9% growth leads our lines in growth. Then Latin America looks highly negative, but in Brazil we had a large changeover of our IT platform, which at the beginning of the year led to some operational difficulties, and that doesn't have anything to do with our presence in the market and our business, and this will certainly be balanced over the course of the year. In Turkey, we still have the first consolidation effects of Yapı Kredi, which started in the third quarter of 2013, and for 12 months you will then see those effects, but also internal growth of plus 17%, over 17% is still very positive, and we're clearly above the business plan which we had set up at acquisition time. Now, the real highlight of the first quarter is the underwriting result in property and casualty with a combined ratio of 92.6%, and a portfolio of 44 billion globally with a combined ratio of below 93% is really a very, very strong result that we were really glad about. It was driven by an excellent underwriting result, but also the interest rate income has remained almost unchanged, and in view of the still difficult environment, or the environment has even gotten more difficult again, this is really an impressive figure. The runoff ratio increased from 1.4 to 2.4%, but with 2.4 percentage points, it's still below the figure that we expect for the year, because we always assume a bandwidth of 2.4 to 3% as the usual runoff ratio. In the first quarter, there was only a low number of nat cats, damages from nat cats, only half a percentage point. Above all, we were talking here about the floods in England and Ireland. There were continuous rainfalls there across Christmas for 2 months almost, and then the long winter in the United States led to the fact that projected nat cat claims for the United States were not sufficient. So if we look at the individual countries now on page 8, you can see the combined ratio for the whole group of 92.6%. If we have a figure like this, it's clear that all the large units will have great figures. In Germany is below 91, France at 93.6, Italy at 83.7%, and our large customer business, HECS, 91, credit insurance, 77. So all these are figures that are really, really impressive and that show that we've steered, or we are in the process of developing the whole segment into a very good direction. There were 3 weaker points in the good figures. First of all, the topic of Brazil. Here we're talking about health insurance. Health insurance that drove the combined ratio above 100%. In Central and Eastern Europe, we have the market difficulties in Russia, where the rules for motor insurance were changed over the course of the last year, and no one can make any profit in this market any longer, which is also due to the fact that the premiums in third-party liability insurance are fixed by the government in Russia, and you cannot heighten them if you would need to from an economic point of view. And in the United States, as I said before, 6.3 percentage points are the influence of natural catastrophes. Those are all the winter weather related claims. Turkey, on the other hand, is still at a very good level, and this is still the leading combined ratio in the market that we have there. Just quickly on page 9, the current yield in P&C has remained basically unchanged, and it shows our underlines are strong investment results. I will then now go into the life health segment on page 10. Here we have seen the large growth, 15.7% plus in local revenue figures. Here once again, FX effects have cost us some growth. Without them, internal growth was even higher at 16.4%, driven by all large markets. And I would really like to underline the result in the United States. In the fixed index annuity area, we had 2.1 billion euros more in sales than in the previous year. Sales in our variable annuity business were reduced slightly by 200 million, so that net, we had a higher sales of 1 billion euros in the United States, and then this is, of course, offset to 0.2 through the weak dollar, and this shows the high presence of our life health business across the globe and the interest or the demand for our product innovations. Our new fixed index annuity product in the United States offers the customer no restrictions of the upside any longer, because part of the money will be invested into stocks, and whereas there is a downside protection for the customer, so that the product basically fulfills both requirements to a high degree. It's an interesting hybrid product between a unit-linked and a classical European guarantee product, and it's works really well, obviously. You can also measure the revenues and net inflows as an asset management. Then we have around 5 billion new customer money which we've received as the net effect between cancelled policies and newly contracted ones, which is also a record level for Allianz Group. Now, the operating profit or the operating result in life health, in view of the pressure of the low interest rate on our average rate yield, you cannot expect that the interest rate surpluses will be increased, so maintaining the result is really a very good result for us. We had 25 million euros more in technical margin, but I have to explain that some asset managers, so companies that have a pension-like structure in Spain and Eastern Europe, they were first, they were reflected so far in asset management and were now transferred to Life Health, which is the better presentation according to the management responsibility, as they are under the responsibility of the local life health management in Spain and Eastern Europe. That's why they were transferred here, and that's the increase of the operating results. We're talking about 32 billion euros of assets under management, so a significant result, which is then, of course, lacking, on the other hand, in the asset management figures. The value of new business, that is the slightly complicated actuarial measurement of new business. The new business margin of 2.5% is what we have in our planning and what we also published for the fourth quarter, so that's a good result, and a value of new business of 360 million euros in million euros is on par with the results before the financial crisis, and we're therefore very satisfied with it. Let me now look at the investment margin on page 13. That's always what the outside world is asking for. Can we fulfill our guarantees? Will something remain for the shareholders and, above all, for the customers? And if you look at the figures here, the situation has remained very stable, and that's a consequence of also of the stable operating result, and this is gives a good confirmation of the position that we're in right now. And in the lower area, you find the book value of assets, and here you can also see the high net inflows because the increase from 403 billion to 414 stems from the new inflows, but also from interest rate gains that we've made. The unrealized gains between the first quarter of 2013 and 14 haven't changed that much. Now, looking into asset management on slide 14, first of all, since the end of the year, our third-party assets under management have increased from 1,329 billion to 1,342 billion euros. Now, how can this be in view of all the news and reports about PIMCO? Well, we had 29 billion outflows net from PIMCO, but as interest rates have dropped again, the market values of the fixed interest rate products had a positive development, which overall led to a positive figure. What also should be mentioned as well is that the net outflows at PIMCO compared to the fourth quarter have approximately were reduced by approximately half, and I think we're on a positive course towards consolidation. Let me now talk about revenues and profitability in this area. Revenues decreased by 19% compared to the previous year's quarter, but what's important here is the point performance fees on top. Look at that. The performance fees decreased from 276 million to 19 million euros. As I had mentioned at the beginning, if those funds are being paid back, then that is the point when the performance fees will be recognized. The revenue recognition, there is a certain point when certain revenues can be recognized, and for private equity funds, there is a performance fee for successful funds for the fund managers, and this will be recognized once the money is being paid back to the customer. And this is exactly what happens also in asset management. Once the money is transferred back to the customer, then the performance fees will be calculated and invoiced. We have further funds which are in the face of higher maturity, which will be paid back in 2016-17, when we will have large one-off performance fees again. And I mentioned that in February of this year, we started with a new fund, and in 5 to 6 years, and hopefully with good management, this will also lead to significant one of performance fees again. But taking aside these performance fees, we have a decrease of revenues in asset management of 1585 to 1497, so 1,497 million euros, and this can also be explained in part through the weak dollar itself. The decreases weren't that large at all. The drive for decrease was PIMCO. Allianz Global Investors, on the other hand, showed a slight growth, and especially if you look at the provision margins, taking out the provision fee, the performance fees, you can see that the situation has remained highly stable, which also shows the strength of our business model, and this also means that PIMCO was able to adapt its costs to its revenues. These explanations will then be transferred directly into the operating profit on page 16. The decrease from 877 to 646 million euros is due to these performance-based fees, then also foreign exchange effects, 21 million. So the development was much better, and it was no surprise over the last few months, but even after the results 1 year ago, I explained that the performance fees would certainly not be repeated. And that brings me to the end of my presentation, or close to the end of my presentation. Finally, we have the corporate and others sector, the financing of the group, the costs of the group headquarters, and some individual businesses like our small banks. Not that much change in this regard compared to the previous year. Last year in the first quarter we had very high one-off interest rates revenues from the end of a dormant holding at Commerzbank. That's why this year we have 81 million less in interest rate income. And you will remember that last year we closed Allianz Bank in Germany, and the restructuring costs had a broader burden of 88 million on last year's result. Other than that, our banking business and OLB and two smaller other banks in France and Austria. We had a slightly better result here from the operating point of view. That's why the bank showed a result that was 101 million better. So apart from a small reduction of our costs in our headquarters, the segment overall has remained unchanged. So how do we come now? Do we get now from our operating result to our net income? Well, the realized gains and losses in life health are already included in the operating profit, taking out the customer contributions or participation, whereas in P&C and other areas, the realized gains and losses are outside the operating profit. So here we have less realized gains than we had in the first quarter of 2013, but these are more or less one-off effects. Other than that, we had a change from the new regulations for the local assessment of pension benefits for employees. We have a revaluation here, which led to a non-recurring effect of 116 million, and therefore we get the income before taxes. And you can also see that our interest expenses from our own debt was reduced. So overall we have a pre-tax result of 2.6 billion. We have an unchanged tax rate of 33%, and that leads to a net income then of 1.6 billion in shareholders' net income. So the summary of the first quarter: very strong operating profit, total revenues at 34 billion euros. The operating profit confirms our operating profit outlook of 10 billion euros for the year, and that then led to the shareholders' net income of 1.6 billion euros, and we're very well prepared for all the changes in regulation that we'll be facing, and also our AA Standard & Poor's rating has been confirmed by our balance sheet position. So overall, the quarterly results was shaped less by non-recurring effects than the one 12 months ago, so that after a very strong quarter, first quarter in 2013, the quality of the results for 2014 was even better, even though the figures are slightly lower. And now I'm looking forward to your questions. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone keypad. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. If you find that your question has been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star and 2. So again, please press star 1 to ask a question.
The first question comes from Michael Fleming from Börsen-Zeitung. Hello, Mr. Bemmer, Mr. Host, Michael Fleming from Börsen-Zeitung. I have three questions to all three divisions. First of all, PIMCO. I'd like to understand the performance fees because you outlined this with the private equity and the private funds and why this is going down. I've used to understand it that so far this item also includes other performance fees. Is that a wrong perception? And I also would like to know, what was the outperformance in the first quarter? What's the level you think is necessary in the midterm in order to attract external customer funds? Second question to PNC, you outlined the combined ratio of the cost quarter as some real highlight. Is that definitely everything you can achieve, or would you believe that this level is going to be maintained for the next 12 months, excluding NatCats? And the third question relates to life insurance, and you relate it to internal figures in the quarterly report, so basically based on one-off business. So can you differentiate between current contributions and one-off? Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Fleming. The success fees in PIMCO, of course, this line includes the normal success fees from current funds. It was just important for me to emphasize that because the success fees coming from the ongoing performance is something that is coming about for the end of the year, whereas first quarter, and that's why I was emphasizing this. These are one-off effects coming from the settlement of private funds, and because of the language, private funds and private funds or closed funds is the same, and I explained that at the year end because we understood that we knew that this definitely will have a strong influence on the first quarterly results, and that's why we were trying to explain this beforehand. And if you look at analysts' estimates assuming a 2.5 billion figure or 2.50, depending on which group of analysts you take, they strongly deducted this one-off amount in their calculation. But that does not come as a surprise. Our performance PIMCO in the three-year performance, and we're selling a long-term performance instead of a performance only for the next 30 days, which is 88% outperformance. That dropped further. Yes, it dropped slightly. The short-term performance of PIMCO definitely weaker than the long-term performance, since the short-term performance of an asset manager is subject to coincidence and fluctuations, because you cannot always be right with your opinion of how the development will go on over the next few weeks. That's why, actually, what we're selling our customers is a long-term performance. And actually, throughout the entire industry of the fixed income managers, where you see 88% in the 3 years performance is market-leading, the fact that smaller funds in the first quarter 2014 had the right starting portfolio, and that's why they were better, cannot be compared with those people who manage several hundred billion. That's why these short-term rankings, I believe, are quite confusing or misleading, because if you have to invest 50 million, and if you have in the first quarter and you bought 30 years U.S. Treasury, and when the bid was the highest gain, that looks great, but that does not necessarily mean that you will be able to render a very good 3 years performance. Oh yeah, that's understandable. Looking into PNC, that works better. The cost ratio started fine, and the underlying loss ratio was developing very nicely, so that I believe if we exclude NatCats, I think we're well on track. I not only focused on the strong points of the quarter, but also the three weak points of the quarter. And if we keep on working on these three weak points, then we will have a natural potential of becoming even better. In addition, I explained that by year end, we are buying less reinsurance as compared to previous years, and the reinsurance expenses, that'll take some time until it will be reflected in the earned net premiums. So the first quarter only shows a very weak effect. That is why I believe, with all the uncertainties out there in P&C, we're doing fine, and so that's why we can be confident with regard to the forthcoming 7.5 months of business. And your third question related to the single premium, regular premium distribution. If I pick Germany as an example, when it comes to recurring premiums, growth is 7 million in Germany, and the one-off premium, 507 million. In the U.S., our business, almost 99% of the business is one-off premium business. However, there's a strong stability. Once we establish new products that customers love, and I think we found a product in the U.S. that really fits our distribution mix. Traditionally, our distribution sold a lot of variable annuities until we reduced that product, and then the new hybrid product that we implemented fits very nicely to our expectations of the sales channel, and that's why this is being reflected in the good results. I'd love to sell more regular premiums, because one-off premiums, you would have to fight for that every month, but as long as this fight is as successful at the moment, we love fighting. May I probe on asset management? Yes. If I got you right, then this one-off performance fees will materialize in a relevant level by 2016 or only. What is the level of the performance fees in 2013? How much was that in order to be able to differentiate this effect? I would have to double check, but I would say last year there were 80 million on current performance fees. I won't be able to guarantee this figure, but that is the rule of thumb, basically. Just an estimate. Thank you very much. Next question. The next question comes from Stefan Weyer from DPA AFX. Stefan Weyer, please. Yes, good morning. I have two questions. Just one panel. The large cats, nat cats, can you identify them in absolute figures to have an idea, to compare? And then the Malaysian airline flight, Is it possible to specify the market loss and your own burden? Can you say anything about that? Well, in fact, we didn't have many major losses in the first quarter. The major losses, there are only two actually that come to my mind. There was a Prestwood plant in Austria that burned down, and also this tragic flight event of Malaysian Airlines. The market loss of Malaysian Airlines is higher, will become higher than originally assumed, because the normal insurance cost will be added by this very high surge cost. So we're taking a share of 9% in this loss, and we reckon with $30 million of loss for our 9% involvement. And that's why we can calculate the market damage, and that is $350 million. And the total net cut is 50 million euros in the first quarter, which is distributed to smaller floodings in England and Ireland, and winter losses, whether it comes to collapsing roofs because of the weight of snow or car damage. But that is not attributable to just individual events, but that is the overall mass effect. Do you have a previous year value about Nat Cat losses? That was 0.2% higher. So that's roughly 20 million. Okay, so 70 in total. Thank you. Next question, please. Next question comes from Ulrike Dauer from Wall Street Journal. I have two smaller questions. First of all, asset management, because you said assets are being shifted to life, health, and banking. Does that relate to the 36 or 38 billion? Was that the overall total that you mentioned before, the 32 billion euros? My second question, with the net income, I found that in the small key figure table in property casualty, that then 37% lower. I still don't have an explanation what could have been the reason, because it might have been the pension obligation. Maybe you can outline this in more detail. Thank you very much. You know, the word pension, I used it in twice. You need to differentiate between pension funds offering pension products for customers, plus our internal pensions, that means the internal pension liabilities in-house. So the external pension funds and coming from asset management, and that was shifted to life and health, were 32 billion euros. And there are markets like Poland, the Czech Republic, and Spain, which actually is a product which is very closely aligned with life insurance. But due to regulatory reasons, it is being maintained separately as pension funds. That also exists in Germany. And that used to be itemized in asset management before. NAM, by nature and based on the management responsibility, actually, they belong to life and health, life and PNC. Jay Ralph, our CEO for managed asset management, is not responsible for these pension funds, and that's why this figure based on management responsibility should be 100%. So the total figure was 32 billion, right? Let me check. That is on page 16, where you see the P&L effect. And on page 15, we've shown this There's also a footnote that explains the transition. That was the press presentation and the German language press presentation, right? Okay. And my second question about the net income. All right. That is rather complicated due to the financial modernization law, and actually this pension obligations is maintained centrally within the SE, and the German subsidiaries have also transferred their contribution in cash to the headquarters. That's why the net income in PNC is reduced by this amount. But that's actually a group internal shift, because in the corporate segment we have the counter item. It's not really clear to do this, but the accounting principles force us to do so. Otherwise, it's rather confusing. So the pensions, right, the company pension is located in the headquarters. That means the central pensions are being maintained for all German group employees. It's just the shift that the net income in PNC is otherwise unchanged on an absolutely good level. That is something that is a bit unfavorable because of the accounting principles. And you don't see any distortion in the net income if you take a closer look. All right. I still haven't understood why this is in PNC and not in Life Health, but that's probably a different discussion. No, these are the pensions of the employees, not of the customers. That's why it has nothing to do with Life and Health. These figures in Life and Health are smaller, but they also paid to headquarters and also asset management as well, because Allianz Global Investors as a German company also paid of 14 million, and that's why this refers to all German employees. But in our group headquarters, we're essentially maintaining our pensions for our own employees, and that's why the employees going on retirement will be paid by the headquarters. That's why we're liable for all German employees. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Next question, please. Mrs. Krieger from Süddeutsche Zeitung. I'd like you to explain the results of Allianz Life, because revenues have gone up considerably, but the operating income dropped by 20%, and the new business value as well, although the new product perspective is running fine. Why that? Mrs. Krieger, of course. The operating result, the operating income, largely depends on the gains from share price have been realized throughout the quarter. And the customer claims plus the profit share determined for that quarter, that 4.2%, will determine the amount of share price gains we need. And since we have 400 million less than the year before, which actually shows the strength of the underlying investment result, that's why it is reflected negatively in the operating result in the quarter. But this does not have any effect on the overall year perspective. And that's why the new business margin was lowered. Perspectiva is a product that has been fully adjusted to the Solvency II world. Perspectiva consumes less risk capital in the Solvency II calculation, but at the same time it offers the customer higher yields. And that's why the new business value of this product is slightly lower, which is fine, because if you compare the gains compared with the adjusted capital, the committed capital, the shareholder sees the positive end, and on the other side, the customer gets a higher interest yield, which is reflected in a lower operating result of this product in the future. And that is why it also leads to a lower new business value. I think this is a good mix. So everyone's gaining a benefit. All right? Ms. Krieger?
Yes.
The next question comes from Oliver Süß from Bloomberg. Thank you. Good morning. I might have missed it. What about the prices in P&C? Can you say something about that in the first quarter? And further to the new re-established stress fund from BIMCO, if I got this right, fundraising went better than thought. Is that something you probably think of desiring more products from BIMCO like that? And is Allianz as well financed in this fund as well? Thank you. Yes, Mr. Süß. This distressed debt fund, of course, there are always been new ones implemented. PIMCO was able to collect the $5.5 billion, which is a very large fund compared with others. But it's also proof of how satisfied investors of earlier fund generations were, because they rendered very high returns, and that actually shows and reflects the confidence of the investors into PIMCO's capability to render a good result again. We are not involved into this fund ourselves, because once we do that, PIMCO is an important manager of our own funds, but we don't mix funds with third-party funds. And I think we're big enough as a customer for PIMCO so that we get our own capital investment. And the prices in P&C in Germany, they're roughly 2% price growth, and France 2%. Italy, unsurprisingly, prices slightly decline. In the U.S., we still see price increases of good 3%, but the price increases are slightly weaker than at the end of the year 2013, and the other regions show rather flat development. But in the appendix, there is also one page that identifies the price details together with comments. You might find the information that I was not able to give you now, but of course, if not, you can turn to us again and ask us. I think it was page 60 in your file. Now the next question, please.
Our next question comes from Christopher Kundi of Insurance ERM. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Good morning, Helena. I wanted to ask you about the economic capital solvency, the economic solvency ratio, and the changes to that following the inclusion of the latest developments in the Solvency II negotiations. I understand the figure for the year end declined by from 222% to 194%, and I was wondering if you could explain the reasons behind that decrease.
Thank you, Christopher. I'm glad that you're asking English question, as it is quite a while ago. I wanted to remind everybody that we typically answer English questions in English and that there will be no translation. That's our normal procedure, just as a reminder. Peter, please.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. Actually, it's a bit of a complex question, therefore the answer cannot be very simple. So, Solvency II, yes, the legal framework has been defined in October, signed off again in February. Still in the details, there is a lot of moving parts, and these moving parts can still move a ratio easily 10, 20 points in one or the other direction. So what did we change? We actually announced already in our February or early March presentation of the results that with the expected changes, the model will fall below 200%. And there were two main drivers of the reduction. That was a risk capital charge for own pension. So once again, a topic of own pension, so that are the pension obligation for our employees, not for our customers. And secondly, there is a discussion in among the community of European regulators, should there be a risk charge for government bonds. We have now in our calculation included a risk charge for government bonds, and I think that is a very conservative approach, as I doubt that a lot of our peers would have done the same. And certainly that has to be worked out on a European level, that we are creating here among the large groups and also smaller groups a level playing field, that it is either in the internal models for everybody or it is excluded from the internal models for everybody. We have now taken here the more conservative view, therefore I think the 203% we show at end of March is a very strong Solvency II ratio. And let's see how the debate continues, because I think as we are leading franchises in a number of European markets, it would not be a fair comparison if the German regulator would force us to compete in Southern Europe with a charge on government bonds where the rest of the market has not this charge. So that is exactly the open debate, and then there are smaller points which will move the number up and down. And what we said some months ago, yes, it is complex. We will update and upgrade our model every quarter to the newest status of regulatory discussion, and it will take probably another 4 or 5 quarters before we can really say now that is the final way how we present it.
What capital charge do you put on the government bonds?
That makes a good 15 points of the total solvency ratio. Yeah, well, there is the credit charge and the spread risk. So that are the two charges, and you can have a lot of intellectual discussions. Maybe spread risk is unfair for government bonds. We talk here mainly about the euro-related bonds. As long as Mario Draghi states that he will buy any bond, you can argue that the credit spread is not a relevant parameter. So there is a lot of discussion, and in particular I would like to highlight that banks in their internal models are not yet putting a charge on the government bonds, although that is also a discussion in the world of banking regulation.
Thank you.
Next question, please.
today's question and answer round, and I'll hand back to Mr. Gross for his final remarks. Well, if there are no further questions, then we're glad that we've answered all your questions, and we wish you all the best for the remainder of the day. And also from my side, says Mr. Wemmer, also from my side, all the best, and we hear you at the next financial press conference. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation and wish you all the best for the remainder of the day.